This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Walker Wildman here. Brand new edition of the program here on American Family Radio. AFR.net is our URL. That's where you can listen live and catch past episodes of the program over at AFR.net, or you can download the AFR app. As a reminder, we've got the live video up on Facebook and X. Just type in the name of the show, At the Core, on Facebook or X or stream.afa.net, and you can catch the live video on the various platforms. Stream.afa.net is our very own streaming platform. All right, let's jump into our scripture for the week, and then we'll get right into the news. Proverbs chapter 22 is where we are this week. A good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. A good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. And I'm going to read verse 2 because the two complement each other. Verse 2 says, the rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all. So that's verses 1 and 2 in Proverbs 22. A lot of truth here. And what we can draw from this, there's several things, but the one thing I want to point out today, one thing we can draw from this is that at the end of the day, the world looks at things from a sin-driven lens, or a sin-filtered lens, if you will, as far as showing preferential treatment, or different types of ways that we envy others, and we have jealousy and discontentment, and we've got all this sin nature wrapped up in us. And people come from different backgrounds, different walks of life, different life circumstances. But the common denominator with everyone is the fact that we're all born into sin. And the only way out of that sin is through the blood of Jesus Christ. It doesn't matter what country you're born in, how tough or easy your life has been, what economic class you're in, all of these different man-made classifications of people and families. None of that matters. From an eternal perspective, all that matters is, do you trust in Jesus for salvation or not? Do you trust in Jesus as the eternal Son of God or not? And I love how Jesus was questioned You know, the Pharisees thought they had him. Every time they thought they had him, they were going to ask him. They were the lawyers of the day, right? They asked the most overly complicated questions, but they thought they were going to trick Jesus into, you know, saying something that he shouldn't, or saying something that goes against the, you know, the Jewish traditions of the day, or whatever the, you know, whatever it was they were going after. But when questioned about what must we do to be saved, Jesus keeps it simple. Believe that I am, I'm paraphrasing here, believe that I am the Son of God. Believe that I am the Son of God, and you will be saved. And so Jesus himself kept it very simple as far as what is required for salvation, true belief in Jesus for the forgiveness of sins is how we are saved. That's Proverbs chapter 22 and a little more beyond Proverbs chapter 22. A little bit of New Testament there. All right, let's jump into the lead story of the day, and that is what's going on in Washington, D.C. today and what happened in Alaska on Friday with the Trump-Putin summit in Anchorage. Today's a big day for the Trump administration. Today's a big day for those in Russia and Ukraine as well because of what could come out of this. And just to give a little bit of backgrounder here, this war in Ukraine has been going on 3 years. The war in Russia, in Ukraine primarily, as far as geographically, the war between Ukraine and Russia has been going on 3 years since this goes back to 2022. And February, to be exact, of 2022, under President Biden, Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And Ukraine surprisingly fended off the Russians pretty well. Many thought this would be over in days. They would advance into Kiev, the capital, and that would be it. And that wasn't the case, and that hasn't been the case. The Ukrainians have pushed back and fought back against the Russians for 3 years now. And the casualties and the fatalities are just unbelievable. This is a very, from a human perspective, this is a very sad situation. Putting the geopolitics aside, the border disputes, you know, the occupation of Ukrainian territory, putting all that geopolitical talking points aside, from a human standpoint, this is terrible. And the numbers are all over the map. It's honestly hard to get true numbers, but I'll just give you kind of some of the lower end and some of the higher end death tolls. You've got several different tallies here, several different entities that are offering estimated fatalities in Ukraine, but in parts of Russia. But the several hundred thousand, let's just say that. Several hundred thousand, minimum of 250,000 to 300,000 fatalities on the Ukrainian and the Russian side combined since the war began. Some estimates go much higher than that, getting up to 600,000 and 700,000. I don't know what the true number is. I'm sure the White House and the Pentagon have a pretty good idea what the number is. But either way, at that point, it doesn't matter whether it's 300,000 or 800,000. Either way, this is a human tragedy on a scale that the world hasn't seen regarding war in a long time. And that's the perspective that President Trump is coming into this with, is highlighting and focusing on the fact that this is a human tragedy that's got to stop. In a largely civilized world, comparative to human history, this has been a disaster. And we could get into the, you know, Biden administration and all the things on both sides, whether we could look at the Ukrainian perspective. I could get into the missteps of the Biden administration and Obama, by the way, that led to the point where Putin felt like he needed to go into Ukraine, the provocations. We could get into, we could have a long debate about that. But at this point, this has to end. And that's the perspective that President Trump is coming into this with. And so with that being said, let's play a couple clips here. The first clip I want to play is highlighting the fact that the Ukrainian people have shifted on this war. The public view and the public sentiment with the war has shifted. It's gone from a very confident Ukrainian people, a very we will not give up any territory people, to they want it over. They want it done with. Why? Because their young men and their sons and their husbands and their grandfathers have been shipped off to the front lines, and they're all dead now. Okay, so you talk about the human factor. The human toll is now playing into the public sentiment of the Ukrainian people. So let's listen to this, ironically, this CNN report about how the public sentiment is shifting away from war, 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 to we just want out of this whole thing altogether. Let's listen.
There have been some absolutely major shifts. The idea that Ukraine's going to achieve complete victory, that idea has collapsed within Ukrainian society. What are we talking about here? Ukrainians on the war versus Russia. You go back to 2022, the start of the war. Fight until Ukraine wins. Look at this. The vast majority, about three quarters, 73% agreed with that position. Negotiate to end the war as soon as possible. Only 22%. Look at where we are now. It's a complete flip. It's the inverse. Now 69% want to negotiate to end the war as soon as possible, compared to just 24% who want to fight until Ukraine wins. That's a 49-point drop in this position. Now, of course, negotiating to end the war as soon as possible, that's a bit more nuanced, right? Ukrainians don't want to agree to all of Russia's demand, but I think the idea of even there being some territory that would be not formally recognized as being given that Russia could, in fact, stay in, that does have majority support, but the idea of formal recognition of Russia's demands, absolutely not.
All right. Why do you think that opinion has changed to the extent that it has?
Well, I think one of the big reasons why opinions have changed is this idea that this war is going to end anytime soon. Ukrainians don't think it will. Take a look here. Ukrainians on the war ending within a year. Just 25% say that it is likely. Look at this. 68% say it is unlikely that the war will, in fact, end in a year. And you'll notice, John, this 68% looks a heck of a lot like the 69% who say that they want to negotiate to end the war as soon as possible.
So President Trump overnight ruled out Ukraine joining NATO, seemingly ever. But what do Ukrainians feel about
that? Yeah, you know, obviously Ukrainians would like to join NATO. That has been a goal of theirs for a number of years. But the idea that Ukrainians, that NATO admission will happen within 10 years, look at the collapse in this position. 2022, it was 64%. Now it is just half that level at 32%. So again, this is one of the goals that, you know, Ukrainians had since the beginning of the war. They no longer believe that it's achievable. The idea that Russia is going to be forced out of all of that land that they're occupying, they don't necessarily believe that that is going to happen. So again, I think this is one of the reasons why Ukrainians, they certainly don't want to accede to every Russian position. Certainly not most of them, but the idea that they do want to negotiate and enter this war as soon as possible, that has now gone through the roof.
There you have it. That just shows that Zelensky is losing support domestically. That's a fact. Zelensky is losing support amongst his own people during a time of war, which typically doesn't happen unless you're in a war that the people at some point don't believe in or they don't think it's worth it. And that's what I want to drive home here today is that, you know, the media and the Democrats and some Republicans, including Lindsey Graham, he's terrible at this, drives me crazy. They talk about Putin and Russia as if they're bullies on the playground. I mean, I can't tell you how many headlines refer to President Putin as a bully, as a thug, as all these derogatory terms, which, okay, I don't really care what you call Putin. Doesn't matter to me. But my point is that they're approaching this from a very personal, childlike manner. And what they're doing, I'll tell you what they're doing, is they're using terms that are emotional terms, like bully, thug. These are terms that immediately turn the public against the individual that they're using them to describe. And so if anybody says anything about ending the war or, you know, getting an agreement with Russia, well, then you're supporting the thug and the murderer and the bully, right? So it's all a PR, game meant to make it to where anybody who wants to talk about ending this thing is pro-Putin, right? And then that's toxic. We can't do that. But to be honest, Ukraine's at the end here. Ukraine, they've exhausted hundreds of thousands of lives, and at some point, you have to cut a deal. That's a fact. That's how this works.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, we're going to the Holy Land on a tour in March of 2026. We can't wait to go back. My wife, Allison, and I have been leading these tours for over two decades, nearly three decades. And we are going in March of 2026 to Israel. See all the places that you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. Bethlehem, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, all of it. We'll be going there. And also my sons, Walker and Wesley Wildman, will be going to Greece on a Footsteps of Paul tour. You can do either the Holy Land trip or the Footsteps of Paul Greece tour, or both. For all the information on these tours, go to wildmangroup.com, WILDMON group.com, to get all the information on the 2026 March Israel and Greece tours.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. We'll keep tracking this meeting at the White House today. I don't suspect a whole lot's going to come out of it from a groundbreaking perspective, at least today. I think if President Trump gets out of this meeting today without the whole thing falling apart because of Zelensky, then I think he'll be doing pretty good. I think if hopes remain alive after today's meeting, I think it works in President Trump's favor. But as we've seen in the past, I mean, President Zelensky comes in and he's not a good negotiator, not really good on TV. He looks like he's mad all the time, and he is very stubborn. Very stubborn and doesn't seem to want peace at all. But maybe that's changed, and hopefully it has. Hopefully it has, because it's a very sad thing that's going on over there. All right, we'll jump to our next guest. Mary Jo Perry is with us. I believe she's been a guest of the program before. Mary Jo is president of Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights, which is a nonprofit group focusing on parental choice in childhood vaccinations. And Mary Jo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. This is a great opportunity, and I super appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. We wanted to have you on, Mary Jo, and this topic is very relevant to parents all around the country, because this topic isn't just a Mississippi topic. But tell us about this Abigail Sims case. I read up on some of the backgrounder you sent over. Very, very fascinating story and sad story of what went on with Abigail Sims just down the road from here. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Abigail Sims was a young Oxford mom. It's been a little while since this event happened with her baby. She had a little girl who was 11 weeks old, and she took her in for her routine vaccines, and she passed away 6 hours later. So that happened all the way back in 2013. A mutual friend and an MPVR advocate reached out to me and said, you know, that she had this friend whose baby had passed away, and it was getting close to the statute of limitations to file a claim with the vaccine injury compensation program with federal government. And so she needed direction. So Abigail reached out to me by phone in 2015. The statute of limitations is 2 years. And she was about, I want to say it was like 2 weeks from the statute of limitations being up. So she had put it off because when a parent loses a baby after vaccines, it's very difficult to accept that they were responsible for bringing the child in, and there's a lot of guilt and self-blame involved. So she sort of waited till the last minute to get in touch with me, but I kind of pointed her in the right direction, and she's been through the system for the past 10 years.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a long time. It just shows how long some of this litigation goes on. Where is this now? Has that case been closed, or is this still pending in the courts?
So she reached out to me in January. We've stayed in touch through the years, and she was letting me know that the special master had finally ruled in her favor. However, the Department of Justice, so when you file a claim with the VICP, you're actually suing the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Justice attorneys defend the vaccine injury compensation pool of money that's put there by tax dollars paid on every vaccine. So there's like this collection of money from which the awards come from should a family be awarded. But so they filed a claim, and once they got it filed, it was, you know, the 10 years, and finally the special master ruled in their favor. However, the problem was that the Department of Justice did not want to submit to that ruling and wanted to reserve the right to appeal it, because the emails that I have in my possession show that the Department of Justice expressed that they did not want to hurt vaccine confidence by having a dead baby on the books that passed away from vaccines. So instead of defending what's right and being just, they were defending an industry. And so they appealed it. They had 30 days to appeal it, which they did. And then I think it was July the 24th is when the judge ruled again in favor of the Sims family and told the Department of Justice they had no case, and they backed off. And so now she's going to be awarded, she and her family will be awarded $300,000. It's $250,000 is the maximum payout for a dead baby, and then another $50,000 for pain and suffering.
Tell me a little bit about this money, and this isn't the focal point of the topic. The focal point is that babies are being harmed. But I am interested in who funds this payout program. I mean, this is basically, as you said, a program that pays out to families whose children are harmed by these vaccines. Did you say that this is government funded, or are the pharmaceutical industry, are they funding this program? Where does the money come from?
No, they don't. They sadly don't pay any of it. Every time a vaccine is administered, there's a 75-cent excise tax on that vaccine that goes into this pool of money from which they pull awards if a family should win an award, compensation, they call it. If a family was suing a drug company, they would get a lot more than $250,000 and $300,000.
Right.
But the idea in 1986, since it was so expensive to sue, a lot of families never got any compensation. So this was set up so that there would be an alternative to suing the drug companies. And it's supposed to be a no fault, but it turned into sort of a kangaroo court, and the government protecting vaccines and protecting this pool of money instead of, you know, Department of Justice, you would think would be just, but they are defending industry instead of doing what's right. And it's hard to see families drug through this. You know, they lose a baby. It's very difficult to come to a place where you realize you handed your baby over to a doctor who you trusted. You know, you're told safe and effective, vaccines save lives, it's one in a million. And yet this happens more times than we like to think. And so our hope is that with Secretary Kennedy in office now, that some of this will change. And he actually made a statement on the 28th of this month about the VICP and how broken and corrupt it was and his intentions to get it fixed. And I have to think that Abigail Sims' award was born out of his presence at HHS and his sentiments on HHS and the VICP.
Yeah, there's two things that come to mind when I hear you tell this story. Number one, the fact that any parent has to go through this for 10 years is just now 11, well, going on 11, is just patently absurd, infuriating, and whatever other words I could come up with. And then the fact that that lawyers at the Department of Justice would want to keep this thing going over a couple hundred thousand bucks to protect, the quote, vaccine industry, whatever that is.
Right.
You know, you have companies that settle the civil disputes all the time, and that doesn't mean they're guilty, but they do it because they don't want to have to deal with it anymore. But the fact that you've got the DOJ that's just like, you know, forcing this issue to continue with the parents is just cold-hearted. Those lawyers should be reviewed by the Trump DOJ ASAP. But the second thing is that the pharmaceutical industry doesn't even fund this payout fund. This is the way you described it, is it's taken off of whoever pays for the shots, whether it's the parents or the insurance or a little bit of both. I mean, we're paying for our own fund in case we get harmed by the product. Let me ask you this on the civil protections that the pharmaceutical industry has gotten over the years. What do you see is the most likely thing to come from this? Do you think this NVIC process needs to be reformed? Do you think we need to take the civil liability protections away from the entire industry? What do you see as the most viable path forward here?
So the way I understand it, when this was originally passed, the vaccine National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, when it was originally passed, there was supposed to be a way to file with the Department of Justice and also in the Federal Court of Claims, but also you were still able to sue the drug companies, but they ultimately indemnified the drug companies. So, and even doctors and nurses. So if your child is injured or killed by a vaccine, nobody is liable. And since that time, every time there's a vaccine approved by the FDA, there's a mad rush to get it on the childhood schedule where it's protected by the federal government. And so you can't sue the doctor, you can't sue the nurse, you can't sue anybody. When you take your tiny newborn in at 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever, to get them vaccinated, nobody is liable. The only liability lies with that tiny baby and their very life and their very health. And the sad thing is that the majority of pediatricians, when you ask them, they don't have any idea what the safety science is behind it. The hepatitis B vaccine, for instance, that they give on the first day of life, the insert that comes with that vaccine, it has a section that describes the clinical trials that were required to be approved by the FDA. And it says that hepatitis B vaccine was covered for 4 days. They followed 4 days for adverse events. And that it's unconscionable. And I've had pediatricians argue with me that that can't be so, but you can call the makers of the vaccines and ask them, and that is all they have.
Yeah.
That's all they have. And so we have no liability, no accountability. And the mamas have been fussing about this for quite some time now. And of course, on our faces praying. And we do believe that, you know, that prayer, the prayer of a mama is a pretty big prayer. And when your child is hurt, the Lord hears. And I can't think of any greater thing happening in this arena other, you know, aside from Bobby Kennedy being in HHS, because finally, you know, the truth is being exposed and the real safety science will be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who looks into this for any amount of time is going to immediately become infuriated at the sheer number of shots that our kids are being required or recommended, depending on the circumstance, to receive. And they, to your point, they want to, I'm a dad of five. I've been through this thing plenty of times. They want to cram all this stuff together in months when you could stretch this stuff out over the course of years to allow bodies to adapt. But now they're putting multiple types of shots in one shot. So you're getting like four or five things in one shot. When you go to the doctor, adults don't get five things in one shot. I mean, that's not recommended under any circumstance. And so
now there is a honey hole for the drug industry with vulnerable young mothers and their babies.
Yeah.
And it's frankly disgusting to me how they have exploited young mothers and children to prop up the drug industry so that when they have drugs like Vioxx that cause them great financial harm because they, you know, kill so many people and then, it, you know, people sue over those drugs, they've got an insurance policy with virtually every baby in the country getting, you know, at a typical appointment for a baby under a year old, they're getting between 9 and 11 vaccines at one visit. And a parent may say, no, that's not the case, but they need to look and see what their children are getting, because oftentimes they're getting 3-way and even there's a 5-way vaccine.
Correct.
And just because it all comes through one syringe doesn't mean that it's just one vaccine. Yeah. And so, you know, it may make you feel better when your baby's only poked one time, but what happens to their immune system and how their body responds? Like baby Abigail Sims' baby, Anna, her brain swelled so fast that it herniated. That's what killed her. And so, you know, when you realize that stimulating a baby's nervous system and their immune system like this can cause something like a death, like in Anna Sims, or and baby Anna Sims, what happens to the other children who may have a milder reaction? And long term, what does that look like? And the fact is, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't, because there's not enough data on it. And this is the same thing with the COVID shots. Not enough data on it. And they don't want data on it because it's not good. The more studies you do, the worse it gets. That's typically the case when they don't want to do more studies. The last thing I'll mention is I understand the civil tort laws can be abused. Look over in Texas. I mean, they've been suing the oil industry and the gas industry for decades. And the legislature had to jump in and put some maximum damage caps on it to prevent the abuse, or at least fend off against the abuse. But parents aren't even allowed to go to court against these companies to begin with. So it's not an abuse problem, abuse of the process problem. Parents aren't even allowed to get into court with the companies. So I think that's got to be rescinded. The civil liability has to be rescinded. If they want to put some caps on it, you know, $500,000, $1 million, whatever. But parents ought to be able to make their case in civil court if their child has been injured or died from these shots.
No accountability. That's what's so scary to me. Yeah. There's no accountability to make a safer product.
That's right.
And like I said, when you take your newborn in, the doctor's not liable, the nurse isn't liable, the schools that require it aren't liable. The only liability lies with your child. And where there's risk, there has to be a choice. And there also has to be the ability to hold the vaccine makers accountable.
Absolutely. Hey, Mary Jo, thanks so much for coming on. Real quick, 15 seconds, give us your URL.
PBR.org. It's M as in Mississippi. Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights, MPVR.org.
Excellent. All right, MPVR.org. Sorry about that. Mary Jo, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's Mary Jo Perry, president of the Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights here in the state of Mississippi, and a topic that is prevalent amongst parents all around the country. This is an issue millions of parents all around the country care about. What are our kids and children consuming? What's being put in their bodies? Who's making it? What are the effects of it? All of this matters for the safety and well-being of our children. And thankfully, RFK Jr. is doing something about it. And we've got to keep, this is the importance, folks, of the executive branch. This is why I talk about the reforms that need to take place in Washington, D.C. are going to take a long time. And we've got to have more than just 4 years. And this is exhibit A of that. We can't just have 4 years of RFK Jr. We've got to have more. 8, 12, 16 years of reform is needed in Washington, D.C. We'll be back.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman. I'm trying to track how this White House meeting is going, and I don't think there's much happening right now. I think there's a meeting with all the European leaders, along with Zelensky, going on here shortly. So we'll continue to track that. Probably on Wednesday, we'll have a more full report for you. But the fact of the matter is, is that it's in everybody's interest for the war to be brought to an end. And as with any negotiation, both sides are going to have things that they don't like about the deal. And I think that's something that President Trump has been trying to hammer home with Zelensky and others, that it's not going to be perfect. And it's not a perfect situation to begin with. So, but the bloodshed has just got to stop. It's very inhumane, very tragic for the Ukrainians and the Russians who are being killed in the war. All right, let's jump to our next guest, Dr. John Ciego. He's president of Texas Right to Life. He's on with us now. Dr. Ciego, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so Texas, we actually talked recently in the last couple weeks. We talked with, I believe, Texas Values briefly about what was going on there on the ground. This was like the day before the special session, which a lot has happened since then. So we wanted to bring you on to bring us up to speed. So tell us where we are now with this special session and the Democrats that have gone AWOL.
So yes, we are in a special session, and the first item on the special session is redistricting. And so the Democrats kind of pulled some theatrical stunts and left the state to block the legislature from continuing their business. And so we were stuck behind that on the agenda. However, we are ready to move forward. They're finally back in town and moving forward on the redistricting bill, which means we get to pass a great pro-life bill that's really going to help us meet the enemy and the new tactics of the enemy that are even targeting life here in a state like Texas.
Yeah, what you're alluding to, and then I'm going to get you to give us a little more in-depth kind of backgrounder on this, is the abortion pill, which a lot of people were shocked to hear post-Roe how many women use the abortion pill, tragically, to kill the child. Over 50% of abortions happen through mifepristone, otherwise known as the abortion pill. And so states like Texas are now working to get into this space and prevent this from happening. So give us a little background on this abortion pill. I mean, this has been going on, obviously, for a long time, even pre-Roe being overturned. And babies are killed every day through this pill.
Yeah, this is really one of the most important things for our side to realize, is that the enemy has changed their strategies. However, you know, the goal is the same, to promote abortion. And, you know, even in a state like Texas. And so what we see is that women can go online and order abortion pills to be mailed directly to their house, directly to their dorm room. And these groups, these websites are aggressively advertising on college campuses, aggressively advertising around the state of Texas. And so we see, when you look at the numbers, the conservative estimate is over 19,000 orders of abortion pills are coming into Texas every year. And that's on the conservative estimate side. So thousands of babies are still dying from abortion in Texas. And of course, this is just throwing all of our medical safety standards out the window. This is extremely dangerous for the woman. There's no doctor to meet with her to see if she has some of these indicated conditions like an ectopic pregnancy or any other kind of complication with her pregnancy. She could take these pills. And what we've heard from testimony in the legislature is women are taking these pills in the privacy of their own bathroom at home. They don't have any medical advice. They don't know if what's going on is normal or dangerous, or if they need to seek medical attention. It's extremely dangerous. But that's how dedicated the other side is to abortion, is that they're kind of throwing all the safety standards out the window to promote abortion, even in a pro-life state like Texas. And so that's why we're responding with a very aggressive bill that will continue to move this session and hopefully get to the governor's desk in the next 30 days.
You're at the state level, so you're able to work with the legislatures on this. And by the way, I just want to give a shout out to you and all these other state groups. I mean, you guys are really the ones that get this stuff over the finish line, because the national groups, many of them, they don't have people on the ground in the state capitol. So they're just providing overhead support, which is important, but you guys are the ones getting the stuff done. So thank you for that. But what is your outlook like from a vote breakdown? I mean, is this, you guys got got plenty of votes, or are you having some pushback even on the Republican side? Where are you at on the vote count?
So because we're in a new chapter of the fight and we're having to use some new tools, right? This is already illegal. I mean, this is a state jail felony. So making something a crime, raising the standard, you know, the penalty that, from a criminal standpoint, that we're really past that in this battle. And so now we're having to come up with innovative tools, new ways to go after the enemy. And I'll be honest, some Republicans don't like how aggressive we have to be. And one of the things we're using in Texas is litigation, authorizing types of lawsuits against those that are breaking our laws, because these manufacturers, these websites, they don't fear the government. They're ignoring the government already. It's a crime. They do fear crazy pro-lifers like you and me filing a lawsuit going after them. That's really in hitting them, you know, on the bank account, right? Really affecting their business. And that's really what we're using in Texas. It's called private enforcement. It's just lawsuits from regular citizens going after them. And we do this in Medicaid fraud. We do this in environmental law and some other areas of law where we let citizens, you know, stand up for the common good, stand up for a general interest. And so that's what we're doing in Texas. It's very similar to the Texas Heartbeat Act, if you remember that from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But this is really kind of having to adapt. And unfortunately, some leadership in the House is still struggling to want us to have a strong bill. And we're currently negotiating on the House side to make sure that we can get a strong bill passed that gives us the best tools to go after these, you know, abortion pill syndicate that is globally mailing abortion pills, but unfortunately it's coming right here in our backyard in Texas.
Yeah. What you're talking about on the civil side by opening up the door for civil suits, I want our listeners to understand this. Because you can have a great criminal law on the books, but number one, you've got prosecutors that are that have the discretion, unfortunately, to prioritize whether to prosecute certain cases. And
right.
And I can go ahead and tell you, a lot of these prosecutors aren't going to want to take up an abortion pill case for whatever reason, mm-hmm. probably mostly political. And there are other important cases too, so I don't want to diminish that. But you've got these abortion pill, not only the manufacturers, but the distributors, you've got the postal service providers that are all complicit in the breaking of Texas state law here. Mm-hmm. And with any other industry, if you will, which is really a bad name for this, with any other part of commerce or, you know, shipping and selling something, there are certain responsibilities that everybody who participates in it have to bear. So, for example,
yep.
Any business that is shipping marijuana around the country, well, they've got to be studied up on, well, which states is this legal? Which states is this not legal? And they've got to go through all the proper disclaimers and verify that the person ordering it is from the state where it's legal. I mean, this is common practice amongst every other business type in the country, but the abortion provider, abortion pill manufacturers and others, it's been the Wild West and there's hardly any accountability.
You're absolutely right. And you think about the opioid crisis, you know, you think about, you know, other areas where, you know, evil things, dangerous things are coming through the mail. Our governments have worked together. State governments and the federal government have worked together to go after those that are hurting our, you know, our citizens. But in this space, you actually have blue states that are teaming up with these lawbreakers to protect doctors to mail pills into a state like Texas. And so it really is a whole new landscape. And we're trying to use some very sophisticated, some very innovative laws here with the bill, Senate Bill 7, that we're working on right now that will actually give us tools to go after those. And that will help Texans, but it will also help others, because these same individuals that are mailing pills into Texas are also mailing pills into Louisiana, to Oklahoma, to other pro-life states. And so this is really something the pro-life movement needs to unify on, needs to be laser focused, that this is the new enemy. This is really those that are still promoting death right here, even in a pro-life state.
Absolutely. Hey, tell us your website and how folks can take action. We got a lot of Texas listeners. Tell them how they can take action on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank y'all for your support on this one. It's TexasRightToLife.com, TexasRightToLife.com, all spelled out. And there you can get information about the Woman and Child Protection Act, the bill we're working on right now. You can actually get more information about kind of this danger in general of abortion pills coming into our college campuses. We've got a lot of personal stories on there of women who have experienced this. And that's our big, you know, area where we got to educate our friends, our pastors, even other pro-lifers. They just don't know what the fight for life should look like now after Dobbs and these huge victories. And so we've really got to work to educate our friends. The call to action is to talk, if you live in Texas, to talk to your state representative. Call your state representative and ask them to support this pro-life bill. There's only one pro-life bill in the session, the pro-life bill that is going after abortion pills. And that's really where the work is going to be needed the most. The Senate has already passed this bill multiple times this year. The Senate is there. They're ready to work. The House is what we've been struggling with because of all the drama with the redistricting. So we really need your supporters to help us tell your state representative to support a pro-life bill going after abortion pills.
Absolutely. Hey, Dr. Siego, thanks so much for your work. I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Dr. John Siego, president of Texas Right to Life. That URL is spelled out, TexasRightToLife.com, TexasRightToLife.com. Find out all the information on that work there for the pro-life bill in the state of Texas, targeting the abortion pill, mifepristone, in the state of Texas. All right, folks, the last thing I want to wrap up on is this this new attempt to end this, whether it's the abortion pill, whether it's pornography, whatever, you know, of these areas that we focus in on that we're talking about, opening up, I want people to understand that opening up the civil suit pathway is massive. It's massive. And I know if you're like me, you probably have a bent against court and lawsuits because you do read the headlines about abusing litigation and abusing civil suits for financial purposes or to demean another entity or someone else. And so, you know, this isn't a broad endorsement of civil litigation as an end-all be-all. But I only bring it up because there has been some good that has come through civil litigation in our country's history. We saw, you know, civil litigation was used to go after big tobacco and these major tobacco companies that were producing a product that was proven to be harmful. It was proven to be harmful. And so that helped to shed light on the harms of tobacco on your health and on your body. And there's been other examples of civil litigation that have led to largely good outcomes where it's been good for the future of our country and for consumers and individuals. And so this is the path forward to me in exposing the harms of these multi-billion dollar industries that profit off of harming people. They profit from human harm. I know it sounds unbelievable. It sounds contrary to how it should be, and I agree with that. But just the two industries I'm talking about, the pornography industry and the abortion industry, the service they provide harms people. And in many cases, it harms multiple people. And so there's no reason that civil litigation, pursuing civil damages, monetary and otherwise, should be off the table. It should be 100% on the table so that parents, young people, family members, anyone who's been harmed by these very evil industries, they can be held accountable. And so we need to pursue the criminal side of things, also the civil side of things, so that hopefully we shut down these very, very, very harmful industries. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.